Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Amon.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Yes. I just never know what to say right after that. Like, it's like our intro, our tagline, ready to go, and
Yeah, we don't plan this out that well, do we?
No.
Yeah.
No.
But that's okay. I'm okay with that. Are you okay with that?
That's why I just throw in the theme music. Yeah. So. All right. So today we are talking about the latest season of Love, Death, and Robots, this animated anthology on Netflix, which is amazing. If you haven't seen it, watch it now. And what makes it better is that each episode is only like 10 to 15
minutes.
No, 10 to 20 minutes long. So
but that includes very lengthy credits.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. And I believe, Lena, they're called volumes.
Sorry,
not seasons. Yeah.
Sorry. The latest volume of Love, Death, and Robots. Okay. So we're talking about three specific episodes.
Yes.
From, I mean, I wish we could talk about every episode because holy shit. Like, I felt like I needed.
I mean, I think we should.
I needed like a therapy session after each episode.
I know. I feel like we should do a quick recap because this is something. This is a anthology series that we're doing a recurring thing on, you know?
Sure, Amon. Go for it.
So just as a reminder, you know, this is Love, Death, and Robots is a ongoing recurring thing. What's the word? It's a special we do.
Yeah,
it's a recurring special.
I think this is the third time we're covering Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, obviously, previous episodes of ours were covering different LDR episodes.
Yeah. So the way we do it here at Grounded Geeks is we pick a theme and then select a few episodes that fit into that theme and what they're saying about the subject. So, Lena, what is this episode's theme for Love, Death, and Robots? Are recurring end, something or other.
Right. The theme is the end of humanity.
Yes.
Which feels fitting in these times. So the three episodes we're going to be talking about is the first one's called Three Robots, Exit Strategies.
Yes.
I love that one. Mm-hmm. The second episode is called Night of the Mini Dead.
Which is the most adorable end of humanity.
Yes, it says in the description, quote, it's the cutest apocalypse you'll ever see, which I agree. It was.
It was
really cute. And the third episode is called Swarm.
Yes.
Okay, Amon, which one do you want to talk about first? Do you want to just go in order?
I think we should just go in order because it was really that first episode where we were like, all right, we gotta talk about this one.
Yeah, we were like, hell yes. Okay. So this one, Three Robots Exit Strategies, is about three robots that walk into the post-apocalypse on Earth, and they take a tour of humanity's last attempts to save itself.
I think, though, that it's important to note that these three robots are the only characters that have reappeared in this anthology series.
Yeah.
In a previous episode.
They were in volume one.
Yes.
And I missed them in volume two. And I was so happy to see that they were back in volume three.
I mean, it's these three goofy robots who are basically doing a like field trip research study on humanity.
Yeah.
And in this episode they're looking specifically at the absolute end times of humanity and how different groups tried to survive it.
Right. So they first end up at like a survivalist camp.
Yes.
Where people basically just stocked up on guns and maybe meat, venison, I don't know.
Yes.
And like just holed up in a bunker.
Yes.
And and they were talking about how they basically hunted all the deer out of existence, the various animals that they could eat out of existence. Mm. And yeah, and then that basically, yeah, it was nothing about it was smart.
I mean, they don't really make clear in the show how humanity ended or why.
I think humans were to blame.
Like, yes, they do make it clear that humans were to blame, but they don't make it clear whether it was climate change that was the absolute catalyst of it ending, or if it was social dysfunction, you know, that that caused like severe economic collapse at a global and societal collapse at a global level that caused it. They kind of imply that it was all of these things,
right?
Which makes sense because it very well could be all of these things.
Yeah, we're definitely headed down that path, I would say. Yeah. And okay, so that was the first stop that they made on their field trip. Then the second was these, I guess they were like oil rigs that they had
configured oil rigs.
Yeah, that tech millionaires had reconfigured these oil rigs to turn them into basically like floating resorts for themselves. Yes. And they had created all this different AI technology to take care of them. But then the AI turned on them. And also, so they were in the, they were floating in the middle of the sea. They had made this, these little like islands for themselves, and they had overfished the sea. So there was really nothing to eat anymore.
Yep.
And
the same issue that the survivalists ran into.
Right. And they, I think the robots said something like they basically didn't bring on anyone who had any like practical physical skills. So they had developed this AI technology to fish for them. But then the AI turned on them and they were like, fuck you, go fish for yourselves, you know? Yep. And so, yeah, that just immediately reminded me of, well, this pandemic that just won't end. And how our, you know, like our, why am I blanking on the word? Like frontline workers? No, not front. Is it frontline workers that we've been calling?
Yeah.
Like nurses and bus drivers and, you know, like
frontline,
all these.
Frontline workers, yes.
Yeah. I feel like I blanked on that because no one talks about frontline workers anymore. No one seems to care.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the pandemic, you know, we were just like, oh yeah, just everyone just stay home. As if like everyone had the luxury to stay home.
Yes.
And you know, it was like no one took like everyone into account. Like they just, they were only taking a certain class of people, a certain segment of society into account when we were coming up with our, you know, pandemic preparedness, whatever tactic, reactionary thing. But yeah, I mean, like, and so I was like, wow, that totally would happen. These tech millionaires would create their own little resort, spa, whatever, sanctuary. Yeah.
Automated.
And not even think to like include anyone else.
Maybe we should have a fisherman with us.
Yeah. Maybe like learn some practical skills. I actually talk about this with my friends a lot where I was like, in an apocalypse, I would just, I just have like nothing to offer. I could maybe live tweet it, you know, like that's literally all I have. I need to like learn archery or some shit, you know, just so I can have some sort of practical skill.
But you know, what's funny is that the exit strategy that the robots were visiting right before this were only the people with the practical skills.
Yeah.
And that was not enough to save them.
Yeah.
You know, because all the food sources ran out and eventually they got to a point where they were just raiding each other's camps.
Right, right.
You know, and setting up booby traps, trying to protect what they had and steal additional food from others who were basically doing the same thing. Yeah. And that resulted in not so much working out. I mean, the main lesson that I took from the comparison of these two things, of these two exit strategies, is that you need a variety of skills. You need people with a variety of ideas. Like, you can't just have somebody who's good at hunting. You need somebody who can then understand how to set up an irrigation system, for example. You know, like, you need a variety of skills for society to succeed and thrive.
Yeah. Well, you know, yes, I mean, agree with all of that. But I also sometimes wonder, like, I think we tend to think that, like, if you, like, under very bad circumstances, you would, like, humanity would just turn on itself. And which is, I think, what happened with all these exit strategies, right? With, like, the survivalist camp. You know, everyone was just kind of looking out for themselves. I mm-hmm. honestly, we see it right now, right? Yeah. Like, it's a very selfish and all that. But I was reading, this was like some weeks or months ago, but did you ever read Lord of the Flies for school?
You know, amazingly, I didn't.
Me neither. I know the premise. But I know the premise.
Yeah, but it was never part of my reading list.
Right. I know the premise. We had to read The Butterfly Revolution, which I think is similar slash maybe by the same author. I can't remember. Also dark and weird. But I was reading an article recently about how, like, the author of Lord of the Flies, he basically was saying that, like, you know, humanity would turn on themselves. They don't care about each other, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But there are a group of six boys from Tonga mm-hmm. who were shipwrecked for 15 months. So, like, this was an actual, like,
Lord of the Flies situation.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
And the opposite happened with them. Where they actually, they like work together. They like found ways to like keep each other motivated. And if anyone got into a fight, they had rules about it on like,
wow.
Okay, you have to walk to opposite ends of the island and cool off. And all. It was so interesting. So part of me also wonders like, maybe we have to get to such a horrible extreme for this, you know, compassion and collaboration of humanity mm-hmm. to finally show itself.
Maybe. But exit strategy number three
right.
leads me to think that at least the writers of this episode of Three Robots felt mm-hmm. otherwise.
Yeah.
The third exit strategy was all the world's leaders in these underground bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they were just like, these are the most powerful people on the planet, and they decided to ride out the end times and, you know, then pop out and start a new world order when everything else had killed itself and right. everyone else had killed themselves.
When the dust settled.
When the dust settles, yes. And what ended up happening is that they ran out of food in the bunker mm-hmm. and by vote then decided to eat each other, basically, for food.
Right.
And so gourmet style.
Disgusting. Too. So disgusting. So they turned into cannibals. Yeah. Not
yes.
great. But I also think, like,
the Secretary of Agriculture was paired with a very fine Merlot.
Gross. Yeah. I also think, I don't know, like, class comes into play. Like, yes. these boys from Tonga who were shipwrecked on this island were not rich or world leaders.
Yeah.
And I think that messes with your brain a bit.
I think so. Because yeah. I think that as you get, I don't know, this is just me throwing shit out there. All mm-hmm. right. As you move up the socioeconomic ladder in terms of wealth, in terms of power, in our world as it's structured today, you get up there by being selfish.
Right.
So when the end times come, people resort to the survival strategies that they know.
Yeah.
Which is, in many cases, being selfish. Because being selfish then gives you the ability to move up. It is basically the yeah. skill that's needed to move up, to become ultra rich, to become super powerful. You know, right. to a certain extent, like, you need to be a certain amount of selfish and have a great level of hubris to want to run for elected office.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that every elected official is like that, but
yeah.
to a certain extent, you need to believe that you are the one to solve XYZ problem if you're doing that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I can totally see that. And this is kind of, they're showing these scenarios in this episode of selfishness breeding these results
mm-hmm.
rather than cooperation
right.
and being selfless.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, when you look to current events, you're like, this is not hard for me to imagine.
So. Unfortunately, yes.
Okay, so, and then there was a fourth exit strategy, right?
Yes.
Which was how do they describe it?
The the ultra billionaires, the 0.001%.
Yeah. I think it was just 0.01.
But anyway. I'm going to add another zero.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
So these people, they had created their own rocket ships, which I love that the robots in this episode, they were like, they could have just used this money to help the planet that they're currently living on. But instead, yes, they used it to build multiple spaceships to launch themselves to Mars and basically start again on a different planet.
Oh, and not just all these spaceships to restart on a different planet. They also had an insane defense system to keep people away from these rocket ships.
Right, and not be swarmed. So yeah, the whole perimeter around these rocket ships is just full of dead bodies.
Yes.
Of people who were trying to like clamber aboard.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
and, yeah. Awesome. One of the robots was like, so you're telling me that they could have, that all the resources that they used could have just been used to save the planet, and instead they just decided to be selfish and leave.
Yep.
I mean, one of the funniest lines was when they were discussing, oh, these are the rocket ships built by the ultra billionaires. Mm-hmm. It was like, wait, weren't we just looking at these tech millionaires who were in the middle of the ocean? No. That was just your common tech millionaire. These were the ultra, ultra rich. The 0.01%.
Yeah. That was, my God. Yeah.
That line cracked me up and made me want to cry all at the same time.
Yeah. And then they were like, at the end of the episode.
Yes.
They're just like, ooh, it looks like one of the spaceships, rockets, whatever, actually launched and maybe made it to Mars.
Yeah.
And then they like show Mars. There's like these weird
bubble cities.
Colonies, or whatever that have, that, although it was unclear, like, are they just empty? Or anyway, they showed this like astronaut person. And then the camera slowly shows like the face and then the helmet lifts up and it's a cat. And the cat's like, and the cat says to the camera, who are you expecting? Elon Musk? Because that's totally what I was thinking of. I don't know if you were thinking of it, but
that is like, exactly what I was thinking of.
I'm like, yeah, there's a lone astronaut sitting on Mars. Yeah, of course it's Elon Musk who keeps talking about how much he wants to go to Mars.
I mean, so Elon Musk also had the idea to terraform Mars by dropping nukes on it to warm up Mars and kickstart a carbon cycle, basically a cycle,
greenhouse gas
effect that would also help life thrive.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, people who have actually studied this can tell you it won't work.
Right.
That's why there were all these t-shirts out there that said Nuke Mars, is because Elon Musk was like, yes, this is how we're going to make Mars habitable. And it's like, okay, I don't even know all the science behind it. And I know that is an insanely stupid idea and that it is not going to work.
Yeah.
I don't even need to know all the science behind it. But just to be on the safe side, the people who do know all the science behind it were like, nah, bro, this ain't, it's not going to work.
It's just
there's a lot that's going to go wrong there.
Yeah. Also, it's like, I feel like that's such a, I want to say actually it's such an American thing to do, which is like, just bomb it. Like, you know, like just, that'll fix all the problems. Just bomb it. Like, okay, awesome.
Isn't Elon Musk from South Africa?
And precisely. He's been spending too much time in America.
Apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it's just a human thing in general to just want to bomb everything. But anywho. All right. We still have two more episodes to
cover. We do.
The next one is called Night of the Mini Dead.
Yes. So they do say at the very beginning, it's the cutest apocalypse you'll ever see.
Yeah.
However, after watching it, it's only cute because everyone and everything is tiny.
Yeah. It's basically like looking at like if someone made miniatures
of
all these different landscapes and whatever and people and stuff. So yeah, it starts off really weird. Yeah. It starts off with this couple in the middle of the night. they have driven to a cemetery and are having sex on a cemetery, which I was like, really? Ew. And so naturally, it was considered wildly disrespectful to the dead to do that. And then zombies sprouted from the earth.
And then continued to multiply.
And then continued to multiply. And then like turned that couple into zombies and then continued to go off and...
Yeah. Two became four, four became eight, eight became 16. And then that went really fast until the entire planet was covered in zombies.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the like dialogue. Like everyone is miniature and you see it as if you're like a bird, right? You're seeing this like bird's eye view of what's happening a little bit. And so everyone's voices sound very far away and squeaky.
And squeaky and tiny and sped up.
Yeah. Like after the cemetery scene, they show these two women who are on a hike or something and they're just, what are they talking about? Like rent and apartments and stuff like that. And then the zombies come and then they show the zombies swarming across everything and eventually, just infecting the whole world. Like they showed them, one of the scenes was they showed them like climbing on a mountaintop monastery type place.
Yes, where there's like kung fu masters at like a Shaolin temple type of thing.
Where briefly they fought them off, but then eventually they succumbed to the zombies too.
Yeah, by the numbers.
Yeah. And then they showed like the White House trying to like...
Zombies in America, not on my watch!
Yeah. And then they just like... And then the episode essentially ends with, once again, America deciding to bomb everything, and then the rest of the world, the rest of the countries that have nuclear weapons, they also started bombing everything. So basically, the entire Earth just gets bombed.
It was one of those things where the zombies had overtaken everything so quickly that I assume the thinking was the only way to eliminate the zombies truly is to nuke them.
Right.
And that is the only way to surefire eliminate infected areas.
Right.
However, America launches one nuke and then Russia launches a nuke and then America launches another and then China launches one and then India launches one and then all of a sudden there's nukes flying everywhere.
Right. And then the episode ends with they're slowly zooming out. Like they're zooming out of Earth.
You see the missiles flying. Yeah.
They're zooming out into like the galaxy, into the universe, all of it. And then you see like basically, I don't know if it's our galaxy or the universe or whatever. And then all of a sudden you hear like a farting noise.
You don't see anything.
You see a little plume of smoke to indicate that. But then it's gone. And it's basically the end of the episode just shows like, you know, Earth can do whatever it wants. It will only affect Earth and the people and creatures on it because no one else in this galaxy, this universe cares. No one will come to our rescue. And I mean,
it was kind of a depressing thought.
It was depressing, but I was laughing at the end of the episode. Like, I don't.
They very humorously made it kind of a depressing point, which is actually the same point that Carl Sagan made in a much more serious tone when he was talking about the pale blue dot. And that was the situation was, where am I going with this? So Carl Sagan, when Voyager 1 came out, was launched, he insisted that NASA have a moment where we turn the camera around and take a picture of Earth as Voyager is flying away.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I think this is even before Voyager had gotten to the orbit of Mars, that all you see is just this little, like you see a sea of stars and one of those stars just happens to be blue.
Yeah.
And Carl Sagan, when he's talking about this in Cosmos, he said, imagine everyone you know, everyone you've ever known, everyone you ever will know, everyone who has ever accomplished anything, everyone who has ever been, has only ever lived on that pale blue dot, you know? And it was just such a important point. And I think that what made that depressing in, what's the episode called again? The Night of the Mini Zombies?
Night of the Mini Dead.
Night of the Mini Dead. The thing that turned that point into kind of a depressing thought for me is that all of this happened, you know? I mean, they zoom in. All of this craziness is going on, mm-hmm. All right? Nukes are – eventually it ends with nukes getting launched, the Earth getting destroyed, and you pull back. And all of that devastation doesn't have the slightest blip on the workings of the galaxy. Forget about the universe. Yeah. All right. The Milky Way galaxy with its spiral arms is going to continue spinning as it always has. Mm-hmm. And it's going to collide with its neighboring galaxy in a few billion years. And what happens on Earth has zero impact on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely no impact whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we only have the only ones who care about us are us.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a depressing point for me because this was a point being made at the end of an apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like the only ones who care about us are us, but also the only ones who can care about us and who should and have to care about us are us.
And yes.
I don't know. Like, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I didn't like see it as a, I mean, I did see it as like, well, nothing really matters. But also, like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I didn't feel totally depressed about it.
Okay.
For some reason about this. But
it made me feel kind of depressed, only in the sense that, like, all this devastation happened and the world was destroyed. Humanity was destroyed.
Yeah.
And it had no impact. If all of humanity dies, nothing and no one will remember us.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, the thing is, like, I think the nukes would destroy humans.
Yes.
And probably a whole bunch of other species. But I think Earth would still be there. And you know, in a few millennia, new creatures would form. You know, who knows? Like, it would just kind of, like, start all over again. And sometimes
Maybe it would. Maybe it wouldn't. We haven't found intelligent life or any life anywhere else.
No, but I'm saying I don't think it would have like incinerated every single living thing.
Gotcha.
There's a whole bunch of different cockroaches, like, bacteria. 1,000% cockroaches would survive. But you know, like,
would they become advanced enough to develop archaeology all over again, though?
No, but I'm saying over millennia, like, and something. Evolution,
yes.
And stuff, you know, something would happen.
Yes.
There wouldn't be humans, but like some other intelligent species, most likely, over the course of many evolutionary rounds. But yeah,
One thing about this episode that was starkly different from the episode before was the whole why and how humanity ended. All right. In Three Robots, they very much implied that human beings, through their direct actions and their own negligence, caused their own destruction. And in Night of the Mini Dead, it was like two kids being really dumb that kicked off something totally insane. You know?
But I also think that's like it's kind of like a nod to how much of the world we don't understand. There's a lot that science has resolved, but I would argue that there is still a lot of, like, who knows, like, supernatural things or what, you know, things that are just still beyond our comprehension.
Yes.
And there's definitely like a whole lot more that we still need to understand, not just about ourselves, but about the world in general. Like, what is dark matter? We don't really, I mean, we kind of know, but not really.
Not
like,
really.
We really don't know, like, what's going on there. And so, I mean, there are so many things we don't. So I feel like that was like a nod to, like, you never know. Like, something might, like, you know, like, COVID wasn't a thing 3 years ago. You know what I mean?
Kind of.
I mean, the coronaviruses, yes, were around, but this specific.
Yes, this thing, specific iteration.
Yeah, that jumped from whatever animals to humans, you know.
I believe it was a bat.
Yes.
It's always a bat.
Goddamn. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's also just a matter of, like, humans are not respectful of their surroundings. They're not respectful yes. enough to each other. They're not respectful towards other creatures. Right. And that has an impact. You know, that has consequences. And that was like, I mean, yeah, it was this weird thing, like this stupid mm-hmm. teenage couple or whatever right. is just doing something dumb at a cemetery. Like, right.
I mean, there's like, no way to foresee those consequences.
From right. I mean, action. Obviously, they were not being malicious and trying to start a zombie apocalypse. Right. But I mean, I think there is some commentary being made there about the lack of, I don't know, like understanding and respect that as humans show to a lot of things. I can see that.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. It didn't jump out at me, but I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's no wonder the dead were mad. Okay. Like, and also, like, I mean, the story is from so long ago, but mm-hmm. you know, the actress Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
From Hunger Games, all that. Like, and this is definitely like this, when she did this interview, it turned a lot of people off of her, right. myself included. But mm-hmm. she was talking about, I forget which movie she was filming, but I guess they were filming in Hawaii. And there were some, I guess on one of their off days, like they went exploring or something. Mm-hmm. And then they came across these like huge stones and rocks or something that mm-hmm. were marked, I'm pretty sure were marked as being like spiritual. They're, you know, a big deal.
Spiritual sites.
Yeah. And then she just decided to like rub her butt on them. And it's like, what? Obviously, she did not start a zombie apocalypse from that. But also, like, what are you doing? Why?
But you know what?
Like, what did you gain from that?
She could have.
Yeah. She lost a lot of followers, like,
yeah.
because of that. And everyone was like, what the? And she was sharing this story, like, on an interview.
Why would you share this
story? And everyone's That's like, thing, you're yeah. an idiot. Like, you're so yeah. rude and disrespectful.
Yeah, that is extremely rude and disrespectful. Yeah. I would, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just think, like, humanity as a whole could use a lot more respect and compassion.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And this is actually a good segue into the third episode that we're covering.
Yeah.
Called Swarm.
Yes. A lot of StarCraft Zerg vibes for all my gamer nerds out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just going to read the description for
that. I think that is going to be easiest.
So basically, two human scientists study the secrets of an ancient alien entity, but soon learn the horrible price of survival in a hostile universe.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the vague description that doesn't explain anything.
Right, it doesn't.
But I can see why. They don't want to give anything away.
Yeah. So basically, there's this one scientist dude who is traveling to another universe.
I mean, a different part of the galaxy. He's getting transit from an alien race to go to a different part of the galaxy.
Right. And then when he arrives there is already another human scientist there who has been there and has been studying the creatures there. Yeah.
I think it's important to explain that. So what this thing is, it's called the Swarm. All right. It's this giant nest that is the size of planets, I think. All right. But what it actually is like an ant's nest. All right. Mm-hmm. A nest of ants where you have a queen.
Or bees.
Or maybe. Bees.
Like a beehive.
Yeah. Could be bees. A beehive. Yeah. But I like ants because you have many different, within a single ant colony, you have many different kinds of ants. Yeah. Worker ants, soldier ants, caregiver ants, you know, mm-hmm. and then you have a queen who's kind of in charge of the whole mess.
Right.
And it's this exact same situation where you have the swarm, which is a collection of a variety of species, all of whom are bred by the queen of the nest. To do specific tasks. And each of these creatures at an individual level is genetically programmed to do a task. So it's not like they're told what to do and then they have to learn it or whatever. It's all encoded right in their genetics. Mm-hmm. All right. And that's how the nest functions. And it's been around for millions of years. You've got warrior, you've got warrior creatures, and you've got workers and harvesters and fertilizers and scavengers who are doing all of this stuff. And as the need arises, the queen then breeds the specific worker that's needed. And as the episode goes on, we learn that a lot of these creatures were actually assimilated from other species that tried to attack the swarm.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And you find out in the second half of this episode that the second scientist, Dr. Adrian?
It was like Asphiel or something, I forget. Something with an A. Asphiel. Dr. Yes. A.
Dr. A. So yeah. You find out that Dr. A is actually there to learn about Dr. G's work, mm-hmm. and that the reason he's there is to figure out how to actually exploit this resource by taking a queen egg, mm-hmm. and starting its own swarm that they can then use as a perpetual resource.
Right. Was he trying, so I forget what happens at this part, but was he trying to take an egg to like then, you know, grow whatever their own mm-hmm. nest type of thing? And it would be filled with creatures that would like be doing things for humans? Or was he trying to like, I don't know, like turn the humans themselves into some sort of like worker?
No. Things. He was trying to create, or at least his... Yeah. Bosses, his superiors, wanted to create a nest that would serve as a perpetual resource for humans. So a perpetual production of food, as well as even a, you know, armies on demand.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the doctor who had been already on that planet or whatever studying them, she was like, this is not a good idea, blah, blah, blah. But she
was like, you're talking about slavery.
Yeah, she was like, you're talking about slavery. But she had also said they're not sentient,
yes,
these workers. So that's the argument he used back at her, basically, saying, like, you said yourself that they're not sentient. So
they're not going to know the difference. Whether they're working for the queen or working for us, it doesn't make a difference to them or their lifestyle. And she was like, you're right. It wouldn't make a difference to them. Or at least that was her understanding.
Exactly. So then they start going about doing this. Did they steal an egg or were they about to? I forget.
They did secure an egg.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the transport that Dr. A had arranged had dropped him off and said, we will be back to pick you up in 600 days.
Right.
All right. So I assume that this is in this interval time where they captured an egg, but weren't quite ready to transport it away.
Right. And basically, in the meantime, one day, then they start attacking him, right? And there's like a whole chase scene where he's trying to get away from them, blah, blah, blah. Then he meets the queen creature. Yes. And she has taken over the body of the other doctor.
Yes. She's assimilated her.
She's assimilated her, exactly.
And her function is intelligence to the nest.
Yes. Yeah. So then the nest, the queen or whatever, is essentially using all the knowledge in her brain to then attack it. And then she ends up like assimilating Dr. A, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. It's just horrifying.
Yeah, basically. And she basically, but there's a very interesting argument happening there between Dr. A and the queen, where the queen says species like yours that use intelligence as a survival trait don't actually understand that is not a survival trait.
Yeah.
You know, this is not how you survive long term. Humanity is a blip in my lifetime of millions of years. You know, you may come and attack me. I'm going to consume you. And that'll be the end. Like for her, there's no argument. Like she's been around. Humanity came into existence millions of years after this swarm had already existed. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason for the queen to think that it won't continue existing afterwards. Right. Others have attacked the swarm and lost horribly. Mm-hmm. All right. And so she's making this argument, but the real offense that the queen is taking is that humans aren't trying to attack the queen. They just want to start a nest of their own.
Yeah.
You know, and the queen's main offense, that the main thing that she is offended by is she says, you're trying to exploit us.
Yeah.
you know, and yeah. that will not happen. Mm-hmm. You will not exploit us. Yeah. Like, she had assimilated Dr. G, who, voiced by Rosario Dawson, by the way, I don't know.
Yeah, I recognized her voice, yeah. and then I looked it up, and I was like, yep, called it.
Yep. She assimilated Dr. G to serve a specific function, not to take over what the Queen's goals and motivations are. The function of intelligence is the same to the swarm as the function of scavenging or fertilizing or harvesting or whatever, you know, like no difference. It serves a very, very specific purpose. And that's how the swarm sees intelligence as something that is just one tool amongst others that exist.
Right.
And that's it.
But there's no, so there's no like compassion in that though. Right. Because she's literally trapped Dr. G.
Yes.
Does her name start with a G?
It does. It's like Gillian. She's like, just call me Gillian or.
Oh, I can't remember. Something. I can't remember the name.
So bad with names. I'm so bad with names.
But yeah, I mean, because didn't she say she was like, because she's like basically got her tentacles in her mm-hmm. brain.
Yeah.
And then she was like, you can either become fully assimilated and you won't feel anything, or I can make you feel the pain and suffering, right? Because she brought her back, remember?
Yeah, but there was also a bit of, the offer she had made to Dr. A was basically, either allow me to assimilate you and I will learn from you and you'll be able to at least maintain your cognition and your life, or right. I just kill you and clone you.
Well, wouldn't you just... What do you mean? I would just want to do that. I'd be like,
no,
yeah.
No, she said it was cumbersome and it would take time because then she has to raise these clone babies.
No, but she did something to Dr. G, like where she's like got her tentacles in her and she's like kind of like talking through her or something. And then she does something different where then Dr. G is like screaming in pain.
Right. There was something, I think, making it clear that like Dr. G is still in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems horrible then, right? I would just rather die.
Yeah, but instead Dr. A says, I accept your challenge. Because
he thinks he can like outsmart her at some point.
Or at least he has the arrogance to think that he has the willpower to overcome and withstand whatever the swarm can throw at him.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is kind of the point, is that humanity is quite arrogant and full of hubris. And to think that we are better than anything and everything out there, you know?
Especially creatures that have been around for millennia longer than humans.
I mean, that's why I'm scared of alligators, because they have found absolutely no reason to evolve at all since the time of the dinosaurs.
That's so true. That's so weird.
And kind of terrifying, right?
Yeah. They're like, we've peaked. There's no reason to evolve.
We've peaked.
Further.
No reason to change.
Yeah.
No reason to adapt to anything because we done it.
Yeah. I just read it earlier today how a Florida man died from an alligator. Like an alligator attacked him or something. I don't know what happened.
I just assume that was a regular thing in Florida.
I think it is.
That's why
I
don't ever want to go to Florida.
But yeah. Anyway, back to, once again, humanity always trying to exploit.
Yes.
For their own survival.
And again, that theme of selfishness.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, exactly what, like, hello, that's what slavery was all about.
Yep.
The United States was literally founded on this and became a superpower on the backs of enslaved people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting because, like, if you were to talk to any, you know, racist person, they would just be like, well, it worked, right? Like, blah blah blah, like, we got rid of the Native American, like, you know, they didn't survive, they just survival of the fittest, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we're at the top. And I don't know, it just seems very obvious to me that it's not sustainable
whatsoever. And I think one thing that human beings are very good at, and this is something I may have said this in a past episode, but this is something a cousin of ours told me once, that it is human nature that if three people can find something in common, they will look for ways to exclude others.
Yeah.
And
yes, we have talked about that in a previous episode.
Yeah. So, yeah. So what the it is human nature. And the problem with that kind of thinking mm-hmm. is the whole issue of the pale blue dot.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all on this one tiny little planet, and we have no one to rely on except each other. And we have, and no one is going to remember us when we're all gone.
Yeah.
You know, everything we've ever known, everything we ever have been, everything we ever will be is yeah. right here.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that, I mean, and that's why, you know, we have to do these things for ourselves. There mm-hmm. are really beautiful parts to humanity and wonderful, beautiful things that we do for each other, and mm-hmm. that we have to protect that for ourselves. You know, no yeah. one else is going to do that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And on that uplifting, I don't know. Was that an uplifting note?
Sort of. I don't know. I just want to give a shout out to the entire team behind Love, Death, and Robots for once again making us think so much about yes. all this.
I mean, these are really deep philosophical questions that mm. don't have a clear answer. You know?
Yeah, no, but
it's
like
questions they're... for the sake of questions. And that's okay.
Yeah, and I love that they are exploring these immensely deep questions in, yeah. you know, like 7 to 22 minute episodes, mm-hmm. you know, and with some of the most beautiful animation I've ever seen. So
yeah,
if I mean, anything, just watch it for that. The animation.
Absolutely. I mean, every single one of these episodes is put together completely differently.
Yeah.
Completely different animation styles. And it's an artistic choice, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, some of these are very clearly hand-drawn and look crude, but it feeds into the story.
Right.
It tells the story. A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, over a month ago now, we talked about the documentary Flea
mm-hmm.
and how that was animated and how the creators of the movie made animation choices for different parts of the story to help the audience feel
yeah.
what they wanted the audience to feel, purely based on how it was visually crafted.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a huge power to that in animation that I don't think live action is ever going to be able to do.
I don't think so either.
A limitation to how much you can do with live action, mm-hmm. quite frankly. You know, you can yeah. do a lot with lighting and colors and things like that, but you can't literally draw people different.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Once again, shout out to Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah. And a huge shout out also to Netflix for giving the amount of funding necessary to make yeah. these artists' visions come true.
Yeah.
Because for 10 minutes, some of these episodes, like, I know it cost a lot to make.
Not just cost, but like the time and energy it takes to make this sort of animation.
Mm. Yep.
Like there are, I mean, the CGI effects in like Marvel movies, like a 20 minute scene could take like 6 months to make.
Absolutely.
You know, like, and I'm sure it's the same exact case with all these episodes.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And some of them, it's so hyper realistic. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Have you noticed though, in some of the, again, we will definitely do another episode about Volume 3 of Love, Death, and Robots. Cause right. again, like there's just
so many topics,
about. But in one of the episodes it showed people and I was like, these people look really familiar. And then I looked up and I was like, they also sound like these actors that I've seen. And I looked up and the voice actors that they had chosen, they basically drew them, like their faces, their features, yeah. all of it. So
yeah.
that's also, I think that's also really interesting too, when they make an animated version of like you could have made a live action short, well, like, I guess.
Like they did with Michael B. Jordan in that one episode in Volume 2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Spent most of that time just wondering if that was live action or CGI.
Wait, which episode was he in? Now I have to look
at it. He was in an episode where he was like stranded in the middle of the thing and taking on this robot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
stuck
yeah.
in
yeah.
this bunker.
Right.
It was insane. The animation that was insane. I legit was like, I could not tell for the longest time. If it was,
yeah.
I had to wait for the credits to roll to get confirmation. Oh, okay, there is a CGI artistic team.
yeah, involved. Yeah,
it was so hyper realistically well done.
Yeah. There was another one too, which There, I mean, there was one, and they've each volume has had an episode like that where they basically draw the real life the actors. Voice actors. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
But anyway, all right. Well, on that note, go watch Love, Death, and Robots.
Yes.
And once again, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.